Hi, this
Hi.
is Meredith Irvine, editor of compensationstandards.com. Welcome to the Pay and Proxy podcast. Today, I'm happy to be joined again by Paul Hodgson, senior advisor to Escage. I think all of our listeners are aware of the SCOTUS decision from 2023 in Students for Fair Admissions v. Harvard that struck down the use of affirmative action in college admissions. And while that case didn't directly implicate corporate DEI programs, I do think it gave corporate teams some heartburn about a potential increase in challenges to DEI programs and DEI metrics and compensation programs specifically through an increase in reverse discrimination claims and related shareholder demands and proposals. Just as a more recent development on this, the Fourth Circuit in April affirmed a jury verdict in a reverse discrimination case that was at least partially based on circumstantial evidence related to the defendant employer's DEI initiatives. So, as a result of that SCOTUS decision in 2023, there was some speculation as to how companies would approach their messaging this year in 2024 proxy statements. And at the beginning of this 2024 proxy season, we actually ran an informal quick poll on our blogs, and people were split on how companies would approach DEI-related disclosures, in particular after that decision. So I'm very happy to hear from Paul on this today. Paul is going to discuss what we've seen in company disclosures on DEI compensation metrics in 2024 so far, referencing a data set from Escage on this topic. So, Paul, before we jump into substance, can you just share a little bit for our listeners about yourself and your background, particularly for folks who may not have listened to our prior podcast?
Yeah, sure. So I've been working in exec compensation since, I'll show my age here, since 1992. That started in the UK before all of the governance reforms and the disclosures arrived as I was working in it. So we were talking about highest paid directors, not even CEOs and other executive directors. So I kind of lived through the whole of that. And when I moved to America, then I kind of expanded my area of study from just exec comp to governance and then to the ENS of ESG. And it's kind of got wider and wider as it goes on. So I've been doing this for a while and I've seen a lot of changes, let me tell you, and a lot of increases as well, actually. That's where I'm coming from.
Before we even get to talk about 2024 disclosures, in particular after the SCOTUS decision, can you just explain generally kind of what you were seeing in DEI metrics and compensation plans, how companies were using them, how companies were disclosing them before this SCOTUS decision?
Yeah, so I pulled a data set for the 2023 and 24 proxy seasons from the Russell 3000. There were 280 records in 2023 and 315 in 2024. So that is just looking at the CEO's DE&I metrics because I wanted to limit the data set to a certain extent so it was manageable. It would have been unmanageable because if the CEO is being tested on it, it's likely that several other executives at the company have been tested on it as well. So I did that. So clearly there's an increase over the last 2 years, at least either in the number of companies doing it or in the number of metrics being included in the incentive metric process. And companies do it in several different ways. Sometimes they do it as a kind of human capital scorecard. So there's a whole list of laundry list of items that they might be looking at, measuring, and enhancing. Sometimes it's a very strict, like the 80% of your bonus is based on this, 20% is based on the DE&I metrics. And sometimes it's a more vague kind of like, we'll look at this. There might be either a gateway metric, like you're not going to get any if things have got worse, or it might be just a kind of checkbox at the end of a series of more discrete financial metrics. And there have been kind of qualitative and quantitative disclosures as well, ever since this started to be used as a more commonly used as a metric as well. So there are companies that are disclosing, we have a 20% increase in our gender, my female representation amongst our senior managers, for example, those kinds of things over the last 3 years. So there's that, and then there's vague stuff as well.
So now in 2024, in this first proxy season after the SCOTUS decision, can you talk about, you gave some high-level numbers already, but can you talk about how proxy disclosures regarding DEI metrics kind of compared generally? Did we see companies shift at all in terms of how they used, approached, or disclosed DEI metrics this year?
Yeah. So there were 38 companies that were new to the game in 2024 that hadn't used DE&I metrics. in prior years. This is out of a total of 268 individual companies in the Russell 3000, which I think is lower than most people would imagine. But it's like we have a kind of a meaningful threshold before we actually start to take a metric seriously. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's just in a paragraph that, you know, oh, we also look at DEI metrics, we're not going to put that in because it's not specific enough and we don't know how it's related to pay. So out of the 268, 38 of them were new to the game in 2024. But we also looked where we had 2 years of information in terms of, you know, a matched CEO from 1 year to the next. We also looked at the way that some companies had or had not changed the way that they described their DE&I metrics. And, you know, as you said earlier, it is early days right now in terms of, because, you know, if the decision was, what month was it in 2023? Was it November?
The SCOTUS decision was June, I believe.
Oh, June. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that is actually, that is before most comp committees would have set metrics for 2024, but not before they would have set them for 2023. And since that's what we're looking at, the fiscal year is 2023, the proxy year is 24. So it's early days for that. But, you know, if you were looking out for this, you might have been able to predict that the Supreme Court was going to come to that decision in the first place anyway, because of the way it's structured at the moment. So we kind of looked at any changes there, and the largest group didn't make any changes at all. So 197, that's 64.5% of companies, the metrics were used the same language from 1 year to the next. And there were some where there were minor changes because something else had happened or somebody had gotten an award or, you know, Women of Color or Black Engineer of the Year award, things like that. They were specific to the 2024 disclosures, but basically you could tell that it was looking at the same set of metrics. So there was that. So 44 companies, which is only almost 15%, increased the precision of the language of their metrics. So, which is kind of counterintuitive to what we might have expected of companies scrolling back on being more prescriptive about their metrics, because the Equal Employment Opportunities Commission put out a statement very shortly after the decision saying, this doesn't apply to corporations. And while that's true, there are groups out there who are launching legal attacks on companies for their, not just using the metrics, but all their DE&I programs that they're running at their companies as well. So one of the things that they said was that, you know, if you want to avoid trouble, you might want to avoid putting specific targets and potentially speaking more generally about things rather than more specifically about them. So saying, for example, that you would try to ensure that your candidate pool was as diverse as possible, while not necessarily making, you know, racial or gender based employment decisions, like we got to take this woman on because she's a woman and we have too many men in this role already. So those kinds of things, those are the kinds of things that are going to attract attention from these groups that are attempting to sue companies over their programs. But nevertheless, there were some companies that actually increased the precision, as I was saying. One example is PepsiCo. So there's some kind of general information about progress towards diversity, equity, and inclusion goals. But the paragraph describing the metrics in 2024 is like twice as long as the one in 2023. And there are a lot more hard statistics there. We achieved 45% women in management roles globally, for example, 9.2% Black managerial representation, 10.3% Hispanic managerial representation. Now, they're not saying that these were goals that were set that they had to achieve, but they are nevertheless achievements that are very specific to this program. There isn't that kind of level of disclosure in the 2023 metric disclosure. The language is much more general. And there is, I mean, they have the Black and Hispanic representation, the demographics at managerial level, but they don't get so specific about the managerial representation for ethnic minorities, for example. And there's nothing at all about women in management in the 2023 disclosures at all. This is an interesting one because it's more precise both quantitatively and qualitatively as well. So it was one that really stood out to me that in terms of one of the bigger changes in terms of the year-on-year look. So only two companies increased the difficulty of their metrics. So they raised the targets higher. And 23 companies made their language vaguer. So that's 7.5%. So it's less than 10%. I have an example here for Apple is a better one, actually. The fiscal 23 has very specific, like double-digit increase in female leadership is what our goal is. And then that's the 23, but the 22 one says 47% of open leadership roles filled with women. So there's a specific numerical target there that they say. So double digit could mean anything from 10 to 99. So that's a little vague. But you know, that's just one example. But there were a bunch of others that were there as well. Just they took the kind of precision out of the metrics disclosure.
Anything else just from a by way of example or other call outs that you want to leave for our listeners in terms of what companies have done so far this year?
Yeah, I was surprised because most companies are like, we did great this year. It was fantastic. We had more women. We had more ethnic minorities. We increased them at managerial levels, et cetera, et cetera. All of that kind of stuff. But I was surprised that there was one company, State Street, the investment firm, that actually admitted that it had missed its targets for 2 years in a row, which is like commendably honest. I got to say, which is good because you don't get a lot of that in proxy statements necessarily. In some ways, State Street as an investor calling on companies to introduce DEI metrics in their compensation plans really should be setting an example. And in fact, they do. They have a very, very comprehensive disclosure on their workforce profile, on their DEI programs and what they've achieved, and the fact that they haven't achieved everything that they wanted to achieve. BlackRock's in this group as well, that would not necessarily pushing for DEI metrics since they're a little bit more conservative as far as that's concerned. They're also more conservative in their disclosures. So they're unlike State Street. They're not like saying, well, if we can do it, you can do it too. But that's very much where it felt like State Street was coming from. So that was a good example. And then there was another example of a company that I hadn't heard of until now, which is called Technip FMC, which is an employment agency, apparently. And again, they have a really nice looking graphic that says what their target was for gender in senior management, for women in senior management, and what their actual achievement was. And again, for nationality and race, this is one of the few ones where I've seen nationality included in this kind of DEI metrics, rather than just ethnicity or race. So that was, you know, they actually exceeded their target. So that's, you know, there's always a reason for a company to put a nice graphic in there. And it's if they've either hit or exceeded their targets is a great reason for them to do so. But nevertheless, you know, it's interesting data and it's interesting information to see companies coming out with. So those were a couple that just stood out for me from the pack, as it were.
So just to summarize, our sample set from the Russell 3000, still a minority of the Russell 3000 in this group of companies using DEI metrics and their compensation mm-hmm. programs. Mm-hmm. Of that group, looking at 2024 disclosures compared to 2023 disclosures, the largest of that subset, they're just largely maintained their disclosures from prior yep. year, absent some small updates, changes, developments that they exactly. disclosed yep. in the 2024 proxy. It sounds like the next largest group actually went the route of greater precision right. in disclosures.
Right.
And then the last group maybe moved towards more vague, a more right. vague approach to their yeah. DEI metric disclosures.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, as you pointed out, just with the timing of the SCOTUS decision in 2023, 2024 will be interesting to look at because we will have a full year of compensation mm-hmm. program development, performance reported out at the 2025 proxy season. So would love to have you back next year to look at a data set of 2024 compensation programs and 2025 right. proxy disclosures.
Sounds good.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for sharing all this data and the key trends that we're seeing so far this year. And thank you, everyone, for listening in.
Thanks a lot.